Blog Talk Radio.
Involved in the realm of private investigation. Our featured guest will be Lady Aurora, a professional private investigator of considerable experience and ability, who discreetly employs her psychic talents and magical techniques to aid in investigation and solve her cases. We will discuss the nature and use of invisibility, of astrology, of divination, especially radiophysia, that's the use of the map and the pendulum, and protection against psychic attack. And although we cannot reveal her identity or be too specific about her cases, we will visit with someone who is about as close to the fictional shadow as you will find this side of Hollywood. So, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? Tune in and find out. Well, while we are waiting for Lady Aurora to call in, I want to mention that I have known her for a number of years, and she is very, very knowledgeable in this field and very experienced in this field. She's been a licensed PI since before 1980, and she's received awards, and she's taught classes, especially about professional ethics in this field. And she does national and international cases, and she's given seminars nationally and internationally in the U.S. and in the Americas, Europe, and Asia. She mainly specializes in corporate and insurance matters, litigation, and security. She doesn't accept jealous, romantic, unlitigated domestic affairs or most criminal defense matters. Now, we're going to be discussing with her the techniques and the methods, as much as she will reveal to us about them, about how she uses these psychic methods in her work. But we won't be talking about specific cases. Now, the reason for that, of course, is that even if the cases are closed, there are still our sensitive matters, and we don't want to talk about specific cases. So we'll be looking at things from a general point of view. Now, we're going to discuss invisibility. Now, these are methods to facilitate surveillance, crowd presence, the ability to photograph as evidence using the invisibility technique for yourself. And we'll talk about radiophysia. This is the crystals, the pendulums, tracking on maps. Maps the witnesses provide, and for subjects and missing persons, and this you recall, and we had Paul Clark on a show some time back, and he just published this. He and Cindy Forbes just published this novel, The Dark Brotherhood, and they were using radiothesia in there. Well, this is actually it is used. It was used in World War II. This is quite an interesting technique. Now, Aurora uses horoscopes to cast yet basic personalities to implement during interviews with subjects and to enhance cooperation. And she uses spatial magic. This is to create tension during interviews or relieve tension during interviews, zoning in and out of comfort zones to help during interviews, applying and removing pressure and silent feedback. We'll discuss that. Now, we also want to discuss some of the aspects of protection enhanced by visualized magic when danger is imminent. She says, of course, that she's not violent. She doesn't carry any lethal weapons. But the mind, of course, in this case, can certainly be. And I think we have a call. Lady Aurora, is that you on the other end there?
Yes, it is, Polk.
Well, thank you for calling in. I've been going over your background here and your outline here, what you wanted to discuss. And so I'm going to pass it over to you and tell us a little bit about your background as much as you can without getting too sensitive.
Okay.
Tell us, how did you get into this in the first place?
Well, I've always loved mysteries and always been a curious person. And I suppose it was fated for me to fall into this path. I've been a licensed private investigator in my state since before 1980. And before that, I had to get my hours, necessary supervised hours for licensing, which took about 3.5 years, although I had more than that chalked up. So I'd say I've probably been in the business for close to 40 years.
Well, that's certainly quite a background. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
That's good. You said that you deal in national and international matters, so, of course, these days with this global economy, and if you're working for corporations and insurance outfits and what have you, you certainly would be involved in international matters. Now, you speak at least one foreign language that I know of.
I speak a couple. Let's say I speak 2 pretty fluently and a couple more not as fluently.
Well, I know now that means that you are able to operate across the border and with the in international matters, and that also brings up the possibility of some security work here in that regard. And I'm not going to get too much into that,
I have had some Interpol cases that I can't discuss.
Yeah,
and others involving security matters that I can't discuss, but I don't really want to discuss them outside of the fact that injury could befall me and also lawsuits. Neither one are very much fun.
Yeah, that's true. So tell us about, let's say you're going to work for you're working for a big insurance outfit, and they have a claim that they have some circumstances around it that require investigation, and how do you go about that? And then, of course, Matt, once you tell us how you go about it, then tell us how you use the psychic your psychic powers.
Well, number one, I'm a highly ethical private investigator. I've given seminars on several continents, apart from the United States and the Americas, on being an ethical private investigator, which means abide by the laws and the code of ethics that are governing you. And if some client wants me to do something that isn't ethical, I will educate him in the ethics of the profession. And usually they're delighted to have this sort of education because they don't want to be involved in something unethical either. No. A classic example of an insurance claim would be, for example, a death, an explosion, something happening, maybe just a simple surveillance. They all, of course, invisibility is definitely an important feature, but even more so in security cases. Cases where you're observing, for example, you go to a park because there's a child that supposedly you're looking for a child molester, and you want to be as invisible as possible. Now, I'm a practical in my approach to magic. I usually, in fact, I can say in all the cases I've ever done, I have left my garb, my magical garb, my hooded capes and flaming swords at home, and gone to work blending in with the local population as best as possible. If it's on a farm or agricultural matter, I'll wear jeans and not stand out in the crowd. If it's a factory thing, I'll wear a hard hat and garb that the factory workers would wear. Unless I'm supposed to be taking statements, in which I'd slightly dress better, but not necessarily. I have to, invisibility comes in very handy when you're chasing down pirated goods, trademark infringements. That could be very, it could be a very simple matter, or it could be a very complex matter in the case of foods that have been tampered with or medications that have been tampered with. The lives of the public are at stake. And sometimes you have to go into commercial establishments and take photos of you chase down the pirated goods, you know what they look like, and you chase them down to a certain discount store and go in with a camera and take photos. You don't get big lenses. You take the smallest possible, most unobtrusive camera, and magical invisibility, as well as blending in with the crowd as much as possible.
One thing I want to mention, though, before you go any further with this, some people in magic, in the magical area, some people actually think when they see us talk about, in the books, they talk about magical invisibility.
Yes.
They actually believe that somehow or other they're going to do this operation, and then they won't be able to see themselves in the mirror, or they could walk around. They could walk around the apartment and in the nude, and nobody will notice, or something like that.
The main thing is whatever path working you use it so other people just won't observe you.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And if there might be several approaches I'll take to that, beginning with the practical. You know, if I don't want to be observed, I blend in and look as much like everybody else. You certainly don't drive red Ferraris when you're doing surveillance and maintain a state of invisibility, or cars painted with tongues of fire, you know, practically speaking. And from a magical point of view, if you're in something like a Honda Civic that's gray, that is about as low profile as you can get. And it's a good magical tool to begin your invisibility.
Yeah, this is, of course, when I was in ninja training, they taught us how to. We're all dressed in black, of course, and
yes,
with a mask, with a black mask on, and we'd sit in the corner, and you just go and find a dark corner and sit there, huddled up in the corner, and then empty your mind to the point where you're not putting out any vibrations, and you're absolutely still, and you just sit there, and the chances are a person could walk in the room and not see you at all.
That's right, unless the lights are on and it's bright.
In
which case, you'd be better if you were in a white garb.
Right, yeah. And absolutely. So invisibility, occult invisibility, and military invisibility. Because I remember when we were taking ambush training, they told us that you're laying up there in an ambush. Don't think about the enemy. Just wait. Calm your mind and don't send out any because the enemy can sense it coming down the trail.
Well, your brain waves are definitely a part of this magical invisibility, and you have to, number one, if you're working, and for example, focusing on pirated goods that you're taking very careful photos with a concealed or semi-concealed camera, you're too busy to be nervous. You should be too busy to be nervous or upset or to be sending out vibrations. You're focusing on your work, and anybody that's ever seen anybody work that's focusing their energy on it will certainly not observe anybody making a lot of waves psychically, so to speak.
Right.
Am I right?
I'm not giving away any trade secrets. You're the expert. I'm just kind of agreeing with you here based upon a little bit of experience I've had in this, you know, in kind of that area. But you're right. You can bring down trouble on yourself.
Yes.
If you're doing something like this. And now you mentioned we mentioned radiothesia, the use of the pendulum and the maps. Would you kind of elaborate on that a little bit for us?
Okay, now most of the time in most of the cases I've used radiothesia has been when maybe a surveillance subject is lost or something, and you know where they were last seen, you know where they live, you might even have prior experience following them where you know what they do. And you try some magic, whether it's a pendulum or a crystal or anything else, to see if you can visualize them in their current setting. You also, and it's very possible with magic to pick them up, very possible, because using your brain isn't enough. Common sense isn't enough.
And you agree with the remote viewers that the first impression you get is what you go with, right?
That's right. Well, you use your intuition, which is part of the magic, I think. It's the beginning keys to your magic, right?
Yeah, well, this is kind of like Ouija board. And those of us who have, you know, the Ouija board comes in for some jokes, but the Ouija board is actually a very, very, very interesting device, and it does prove that the subconscious mind can really tune in to things outside happening and outside. So this is radiothesia. It was used during World War II. It on both sides, both the Allies and the Axis, both used these techniques.
One of the best path workings I ever did in radiothesia was I was looking for a critical witness. Nobody'd seen him since we took his statement. It was a death, industrial death case, and he was the only eyewitness. And he was very critical to the defense. And it had been several years since he was interviewed, and he was from the southern USA in the deep south. So I started looking for him there, and the only thing I had to go on was his signed statement as a kind of a way to channel in on him with his signature, the original signature, and his history and his name that was a little unusual. And I looked all over the deep south, and he was nowhere. And so he ended up, I found him in Western Canada in a little tiny village. And it was nothing but radiothesia that helped me find him. Using maps and pendulums and other devices, I really found him. I checked with information, and sure enough, he had a listed telephone. And once I found the city and county where he was, according to what Radiesthesia was telling me. I checked, and information sure enough had a phone number for him, and I got him, and it was the correct person.
Well, that's what the uninitiated would call amazing.
Yeah, my client was absolutely amazed, and I couldn't explain how I'd found him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, even though you found him, if you had explained it, they wouldn't have
believed it.
No, they would have thought that you used. They would have thought you've used some shady methods, you know.
No, because he wasn't anybody that had ever had a criminal record. Yeah. He wasn't anybody with any profile history. He was just Mr. Everybody, Mr. Witness.
Yeah, but he didn't want to be found, and that's...
Well, no, he didn't mind being found. He was delighted that he was a good witness, as we already knew, remembering facts in a very unpleasant circumstance of having a coworker die on the job from an accident, you know.
Do you think that the fact that he was a helpful witness and that he was not trying not to be found, he hadn't left a trail, basically.
He wasn't hiding.
No. Well, do you think that helped you find him, the fact that he wasn't
hiding?
Yes.
It's harder to find people that don't want to be found.
Yeah.
You know, this man hadn't made any effort to change his name or identity or habits or anything.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. You know, we had a show I think it was pretty close to last year. We had a show about remote viewing, and we reviewed some of the Army's work on that. And this goes very, very close. What you're doing here is very, very close to some of the work that they've been doing. And they certainly proved that this sort of thing really has validity.
Yeah.
And of course, you did too. You're talking about horoscopes here.
I'm not an astrologer in the sense that, frankly, I'm not really interested in knowing what's going to happen to me tomorrow, whether it's a good day or a bad day, or doing that for any of my friends or enemies. I kind of like living each day with a surprise, not with the predictability of it. And so when I use horoscopes, I mainly rely on certain traits. Now, I don't know the exact time of the birth of most of the people involved. These are subjects or witnesses. Maybe some of them I have to interview. And it's nice to be able to have a little magical insight into whether they're... Well, you can already tell by looking at them and getting the feel for them, the kind of people they are. Are they tense? Are they artistic? Are they sensitive? Are they outgoing and relaxed? These are all things you can tell with your... with your eyes open and no magic, but reading their insides is more interesting, especially if you have an idea of their horoscope and their natal capabilities or talents or proclivities.
Yeah, that sounds like it's right down the line with what we would say with people like that. And to get a kind of a take to go into, let's say, well, the term interrogation these days is that's getting a bad rap. But let's say interview. Let's say you're going to interview.
Interviewing people. Now, I use so much magic when I interview someone. During the interview, Number one, I use deception reading if I'm interviewing someone to see if they're being straight up front. Now, deception can be both visible and invisible. And if you're tuned into them in an invisible way, you can see what's really going on in their vibrations. That's about the best way, magical vibrations or whatever you want to call it. I also use spatial magic, both on a magical level and a practical level. In the Israelis are masters of this, and I've had some classes from some Israelis on how to do it. You either invade or relax their comfort zones of space when you're talking to them. And this makes them either tense or relaxed. And you can more or less control the interview by utilizing this effectively.
So in other words, you're going to be Mutt and Jeff at the same time.
That's right. Well,
Mutt and Jeff. First you're going to be Mutt, and then you're going to be Jeff.
That's right.
And then you'll be Mutt again.
That's right. Well,
let's explain for those few people who don't know what Mutt and Jeff means.
Oh,
why don't you explain that?
Well, it's like bad guy, good guy. Or another thing is, a lot of this is self-preservation, because if you're interviewing someone and they're becoming tense, you might get information and you might not get information. But if they're getting hostile, and this is usually, they make every effort to hide it, especially if they're a really bad guy. You have to protect yourself and use self-protective means. And one way to do that is to give them a little bit of comfort in their zone. If you've been applying spatial pressure, you might let up on it a little. That's kind of like a tea kettle. You might take the lid off just to let them get a little more comfortable.
I know one of the things that we were we were told over and over again, not to let the interrogator make you mad, because if you get mad, you're liable to say something that you otherwise wouldn't reveal. What you're saying is occasionally or back and forth, we're going to irritate the person to see if we can get them to.
Sometimes it's pleasant to see what they blurt out if they're feeling pressure. But if they begin getting hostile with overt hostility, you definitely want to let up, because you don't want to be used as a punching bag for some hothead, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, well we're getting close to something here. Then
it's kind of a delicate applied science.
Yeah, this is an uncomfortable subject, and especially after some of the activities we've been exposed lately. So let's move on to
okay.
You said you were talking about deception, and then you're talking about protection. Now this is in your outline here, you have protection enhanced by visualized magic when danger is imminent, and then you, of course, you said that you qualify that by saying you weren't necessarily violent and you weren't armed. So,
that's right. I never am. I'm a nonviolent person. By my internal soul is nonviolent, I guess you'd say. Although I definitely will stick up for my rights. I'm not anybody that gets pushed around. But
sure of that.
Yeah, we've known each other for a few years.
Tell us about protection, psychic attack, and that's and this visualization that you're talking about.
Yeah, I have been. I've had, unfortunately or fortunately, you never know what you're going to get. You can get a routine case. I don't want to get into details, but a routine fender bender auto accident case where you have to go out. You represent the insurance company of the person that slammed into the other car, and you go out and inspect the car and take photos and talk to the maybe 12 people, maybe 3 people that were in the car that are all claiming injuries. And I have found some, by accident, some bands of South American terrorists and... in fact, several bands of terrorists, because this is the way they finance their war, their terroristic war, and with staged accidents and fraud accidents and claims, and expanding an accident that happens, or pulling in front of a high-profile vehicle and slamming your brakes on with a car full of people. And so they're, number one, they're defensive. Number two, they're deceptive. And number three, they're dangerous. And there's more than just invisibility involved. At times I have to really protect myself using all the magic I can muster. That's probably the best way to put it. There are just as many ways to, and usually because of the experience I've had in the years I know, even the most routine of cases needs a little bit of preparation of protection in advance so that should you need it, it's right there. Kind of like a seat belt.
Yeah. The question of psychic attack, of course, doesn't come in too much in what we're talking about here. But
I've had cases, cases that ended up being murders that I didn't know were murders, and there were a couple that were very high profile. And I didn't know they were related to the people I was talking to or looking for. And some of them were following me around, which was not happy. So that was when I really used my protection to throw other people off my trail.
Well, that's kind of scary. And I was thinking, as you were mentioning that, this case that we just had just the other day, this on the news, where this fellow saw a couple of people beating up a woman, and he intervened and helped her out. Then they followed him home and shot him and the baby and pregnant. Oh, that was terrible.
Yes.
So, you know, this idea that these people, like we were talking earlier before the show, about how you don't want to make, with gangbangers, you do not want to make eye contact with these people, give them any kind of a dirty look or any kind of a questioning look. You want to try to be as invisible as possible around these people.
Well, yes and no, because if you have to talk to them, if they're on your list, you have to approach them. You have to talk to them. You have to interview them. If they've been involved, for example, in an accident and you represent an insurance company, you don't say, well, I can't talk to these people. These people are bad. I can't look them in the eye. You do your job. And you do it as invisibly and routine.
You do it as... You don't want to make them feel intimidated, though.
That's exactly it. You want to give a, what would you say, an aura I'm a magical aura of green meadows and flowers. While you're
and
talking
you said,
to them,
you said also that you'd look that you try to look as unobtrusive and even frumpy as possible.
That's
so
right.
That you, yeah, right. And,
absolutely.
And use the example of Columbo. I thought that was just ideal. You know, the old Columbo. I don't know
yeah.
whether some of the younger people remember Columbo, but
yeah,
he was just the detective that was kind of fumbling and bumbling,
yeah.
and his tie was always messed up, and his hair was messed up, and he just sort of be distracted, and he kind of sit there and, oh, what do you think about this? And,
yeah.
His mind was always going. I mean, he was always
yeah.
right on top of it.
That's
yeah.
right. I've used that as a guide many times. But by the same token, you do realize that if you're surrounded by bad people, most bad people are bullies. So you don't want to look helpless.
Oh, yeah.
You have to look fearless without being threatening. You have to look like you're in control of the situation rather than a victim. And this is something else it's a very delicate balance of magical things that you have to do to be able to remain safe when adversity is around.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think using occult science, using magical methods? Do you think that we can actually influence events? I would hope in a positive way. Do you feel like magic, we can actually reach out and influence events?
Yes, I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe that. Absolutely, positive, let's say positive magic. You don't want to go looking for trouble. You don't want to go saying, well, I can be invisible, so you take rocks and throw them in windows and hit people and things like that. That's not the way you use magic. You use magic like any other protection or like any other force, such as if it's dark, you turn an electric light on. If things are a little dangerous, you turn some magic on. Not enough to make anyone feel apprehensive or threatening, but enough to keep yourself protected.
Yeah, which right now I'm.
Is that what you wanted
yes,
me?
Yes, absolutely. I think though that we do need need to discuss and this is kind of a sensitive issue, but it's very very much apropos in the time we live in and the way things are going here. How much of your work investigation involves the use of computers?
Oh, tremendous. Of course, every day it mounts. You have to be computer knowledgeable. You have to be aware of the tools available. Just even the simple tools that Google in its advanced stages will give you in gaining information about corporations and many other things.
Well,
you have to, the more you know about computers and the more you are comfortable with them, the more you're living in the time you are meant to be here. That's my opinion. But you don't.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
You don't rely totally on computers. Nothing beats knocking on a door. to see what's going on, or driving to a neighborhood to see what's happening.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I feel like we do need to have more, but not just in the investigative area, but also in the social area, and in all of our lives, we need to do more knocking on doors and less, whatever. I think that actual interaction between people, in many ways, you can learn more because they don't have the computer. It provides a mask. And
that's
you're
right.
You're only getting part of the personality and part of the only as much of the person on the computer as that person wants to let you see or learn.
That's right.
So the field work is really essential.
You have to have the technical skills and the technical knowledge, but nothing beats your five senses for learning what's really happening.
It is true, though, and I will mention this.
Are your six senses?
There are certain services available to available just about anybody who wants to make access to them, to where you can do background checks on people and whatever. And I think most of us are familiar with those services. But as a licensed private investigator, you have some special services, internet services that you can access, I imagine. We have some
special databases, but we're restricted in using them. You have to have a reason and a purpose. You have to protect the privacy of an individual. More and more legislation gets involved in this.
Now, involving a lot of crime has, white collar crime, what's referred to as white collar crime, which is certainly an area that you're dealing in, or you're investigating for a client or whatever.
Right.
So this means that you need to have either yourself, or you have to have the services of what we would refer to as a hacker. You gotta know what the bad guys are up to, and you gotta know how to counter it, how to find it out, just to give you an example. I have a good friend who is a hacker, and I had one of our videos got pirated when they started doing this this streaming thing. And one of them got pitted, and that was back. Now I don't care. Now they stream them all they want. It actually increases sales. But at that time, I was upset about it, and these guys were openly advertising it on the internet and all that. And so I got my hacker friend to track them down. Well, he tracked them all the way down. He went in. They had cutouts, and they had remote servers and all kinds of stuff. But he finally tracked them down. He got them. He knew their physical address, who they were, and everything else. And so we had it all. And I called up the FBI and I said, "Hey, I got these guys. We got them. We know where they are." And the FBI said, "Don't worry about it. Go get your lawyer. And then have your lawyer call us." I said, "Well, you'll do it for Steven Spielberg. Why won't you do it for me?" Well, they wouldn't. But this is the kind of thing, though, that I would imagine you'd sort of be able to do is just turn around the computer crooks.
Computer crooks? Do you mean detecting hacking? Because there's,
there's
all kinds of protection that some computers are better protected than others. Some software is better protected than others from hacking attacks. For example, I have a Mac that I use primarily because it isn't hack-proof, but it's pretty well virus-proof, although I do have protection on it.
Yeah, now let's get into one more subject here that is kind of, that we've done some, we did a show on it. We had this expert, by the name of Roundtree, as I recall, and he was an expert on paranormal technology. Are you familiar with what is kind of referred to as electronic mind control? Have you heard about this at all?
Yes, I've heard about it, but I haven't delved in it. Let's say that.
I'm not an
expert on that.
It's a kind of a sinister kind of thing,
and
it apparently a lot of research has gone into it, the computer seems to be the platform for a lot of this, I'm concerned, of course, in a magical point of view, of the magic that can be transmitted and can be received and transmitted via the computer. Can we use occult techniques and whatever in this respect? That's also kind of a veiled field.
A lot of it depends on the brain waves that you're emanating.
That's correct, especially if we're getting to the point where we're operating computers with brain waves. The mouse is going to be, before too much longer, is going to be obsolete.
Yeah.
Maybe even the keyboard will be obsolete before much longer. And so we're going to be into this kind of area. Now, what would you, in the time we have remaining, Lady Aurora, what would you like to talk about as far as the occult procedure that you find the most interesting in your work?
Before we get to that, I was wondering if do the listeners ask questions, or is it just...
Well, they should. No, they can call in. In fact, if anybody, we've got about 10 minutes left, so if anybody wants to call in and ask you some questions and all, our guest call-in number is 347-857-1830. So give us a call in, and we'll see if Lady Aurora can answer your questions. And providing it isn't anything too...
I don't want to get into any details about either my path workings or about specific cases I've done or specific clients, because that's not cool.
No classified information here. However, go ahead, give us a call. Meanwhile,
you were asking me now what you were wondering. There's one thing, according to the license, that, if I'm out and discover a crime being committed when I'm investigating a case, I'm bound by my licensing rules to report it to the authorities that have venue over whatever crime is being committed.
Yeah, that's a good point to make.
I am a crime fighter as much as that. I don't do very many criminal defense cases. In fact, I've only had a couple in my career, and both of those people were innocent and were found innocent in the trial based on evidence that I got from my investigation.
Well, bless your heart, because there are, unfortunately, with our justice system being overwhelmed and all this plea bargaining going on, there's an awful lot of innocent people that end up copping a plea because they frankly tell them, hey, you're not going to win this one. We're going to, and all you got's a public defender and that's it. So take it and otherwise we're going to throw the book at you. you know, and so they do, and we've had a lot of innocent people. So I think that you're in that regard, you're a national treasure. If you
I also have I do everything in my power not to invade a person's privacy, because people have a right to privacy. If they have written letters threatening lives of executives, or threatened businesses with blowing them apart or something, I have a rather difficult job of seeing if these people are really capable of violence or if they're just hot-headed. And so that's something I take seriously.
Well, absolutely. And, of course, these days with this, with our war on terror, which has... one of the things that we learned, by the way, in special warfare school is that the aim of the terrorist, and this is something they really, really emphasized, the aim of the terrorist is to get the government that they're terrorizing to oppress its own people.
I think the biggest aim of a terrorist is to inspire fear.
Yeah, except that, well, we got a call. Who are we speaking with?
Hello, Polk, it's Dave.
Hi, Dave. Yeah, you're on.
Dave.
Would you like to let? Yeah.
I have only one question, because I know this lady, how deceptively frail and somewhat elderly she looks. What magic are you using to stay so youthful?
Oh, you sweetie. I'll never tell anybody. It's my secret.
Oh, gosh. Well, maybe I'll have to wait another 40 years to hear that one from you. Anyway, nice to hear you. I enjoyed the show. I'm going to let you take some other callers.
Oh, nice talking to you.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. Dave, thanks for calling in. Yeah,
all right,
that's sweet. That's nice.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Dave. Anyway, does anybody else want to call in here? We got about 5 minutes left. How many minutes left? We have 4 minutes left. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh well, okay. Better not call in then. Anyway, let's kind of wrap up here a little bit and summarize what we've been talking about.
Okay.
We've been talking with Lady Aurora, who is a very experienced and qualified private investigator, and she's been discussing how she privately, without letting her clients in on it, of course, she uses occult techniques and magical techniques in her investigations, and as we have learned, very, very, very successfully, and this is... We've been discussing invisibility. That means, being as unobtrusive as possible in your surveillance and in your interviews and in your gathering information and what have you. Radiothesia, the use of crystals and pendulums, tracking witnesses on maps. And we've been talking about getting horoscopes on people you're going to interview to give you an advance idea of what their personality is going to be like. And we've been talking about interviewing techniques using spatial magic. And we've been talking about various deceptions without being illegal or
You mean detecting deception.
Detecting deceptions. This is not illegal or unethical, but deceptive techniques.
Because when I'm interviewing someone, I can tell whether they're fibbing or telling the truth magically as well as the other ways.
Yeah, and trying to be deception in your case would be trying to be as to appear to be as ineffective and as unintimidating as possible.
Well, not encouraging bullies either.
Yeah, right. Lady Aurora, we've only got a few minutes. We've only got a couple minutes left, and so I'm gonna say good evening to you. And thank you.
Thank you for letting me participate.
Well, it's been our pleasure. Now next week, hopefully next week we're gonna have a really experienced. We're gonna have a really experienced magician. Hopefully next week we'll have a really experienced magician on who does the same, in the same kind of area that we work, and it's published and whatever, and we'll hopefully have him on, so next week it'll be a very exciting show, I hope, and we'll let you know about that as soon as possible. So, anyway, good night and good magic.